Hello, everyone. I'm Terry Alexon, Investor Education Coordinator with the Arizona Corporation Commission's Securities Division. Welcome you to another edition of the Commission's Informative Podcast Series. Today's session is the first of a multi-part series on real-life regulators, Anatomy of an Investment Fraud. These podcasts feature investment fraud cases from the Corporation Commission's Securities Division, discussing how a fraud works, and more importantly, how you can protect yourself from becoming a victim. With us today is an enforcement attorney with the Commission's Securities Division, Ryan Millican. Ryan will be highlighting a very important topic in Arizona, and that is investment fraud that targets our senior citizens. Thanks, Ryan, for speaking with us today. Let's start out identifying the scope of the problem. Let me ask you, how prevalent in Arizona is investment fraud that targets seniors, or shall I say mature investors?
Very prevalent. Arizona does seem to have its share of fraud, and possibly more of its share of fraud than other states. Additionally, we have a big population of seniors. We see a lot of frauds that don't necessarily target seniors or mature people, but it ends up ensnaring quite a few of them just because they tend to have money, they tend to have the time. And so while we may not see many frauds that are specifically against seniors, we do see quite a few that ensnare seniors. Let me talk about a few that that we're seeing quite a bit of recently. The first one would be what I'd call a romance scheme. This is where you meet someone online. It could be in a forum, it could be on a dating website. They get to know you a little bit, and then very early on they ask for money. It could be money to invest in their company, it could be a loan for their company, it could just be money to help them travel. I've been seeing quite a few of those lately. The other thing I've been seeing as we get complaints specifically for financial exploitation of vulnerable adults and seniors is just family or caretakers being added to bank accounts, other investment funds, or simply attaining a power of attorney over those accounts. So I would say those two seem to be very much directed at seniors. You have others that are not necessarily directed at seniors, but we're seeing quite a few as we get more and more complaints in through the statute that we'll be talking about today. One of those are just the security breaches. You'll see a pop-up on your computer. It'll say your password has been stolen, your account has been hacked, you need to call this number very quickly. And you'll call a number, someone will give you directions. Usually those directions are send them money. Now, that should raise your suspicion, first off, that you'd get it through a pop-up. Second, that you'd need to send the money, when a lot of times your bank will simply tell you to change your password or change your number. So I've seen quite a few of those. The other thing we've been seeing recently is people are told they've won prizes or awards, maybe the lottery, but they need to send money to claim their award. So those schemes are not necessarily directed at seniors, but again, people are likely to click on those. They get it in a panic mode. They'll click the button. And then another one that we'll talk about a little bit later today is not necessarily directed at seniors, but we see a lot of investments that they are tailored for self-directed individual retirement accounts. They basically say you can invest money from your IRA in this, and I think what happens is people let their guard down a little bit and they say, well, IRAs are regulated, investing through my IRA is okay, therefore I'm good to go with this investment. And while it may be true that transferring money from your IRA to an investment is perfectly legal and you're doing it fine, that does not mean that the investment is okay or that the person selling it to you is complying with regulations.
I see, Ryan. I see what you're saying. But can you talk generally next about a specific case or cases in which the Securities Division took action?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about a real estate lending company that we took action against last year. What happened with this company is their business model was to get money from investors and then take that investor money and lend it to builders who would buy and refurbish and sell real property, mostly single-family homes. This is what we refer to as fix-and-flip companies. So the company itself was basically a lender, but to get the money to lend, it had to get money through its investors. And it found these investors by cold calling, by holding seminars, and through Facebook. Now, if you went to this seminar, they'd promise you a 10% return on your investment. They'd tout it as safe because it's supposedly secured by real property. They touted their CEO's 28 years of investment experience. They said the company's been in operation since 2008. there were some problems with this once we dug a little deeper. So first off, the company, while it was formed in 2008, was dissolved administratively about a year or two later and didn't operate as a business until 2015. What its CEO was doing in the meantime was actually running a different company that had almost the exact same business model, but had failed as a company, was in receivership, and most of the investors just had lost their funds. So to say that they were formed in 2008 and operating up until 2015 was certainly not the case. And not only was it not the case, there was quite a bit of problematic stuff going on during that time period. Additionally, they touted their, like I said, their CEO's 28 years of investment experience. They didn't tell people that the CEO had a $2.9 million judgment against him in Coconino County. This also stemmed from a real estate development that had failed. And they found not only that he had committed breaches of contract, but also fraud and racketeering. Additionally, the CEO had filed for bankruptcy in 2009, and the CEO had also previously operated as a mortgage company that had lost its license due to multiple violations that the Department of Financial Institutions found. So they brought in lots of people, millions of dollars. They put on shiny seminars. You'd go get lunch, you'd enjoy yourself, you'd talk about making a bunch of money, you'd think that it's in real estate, someone that's experienced. Some people also think that you can not lose money in real estate. And then they told people, simply direct your IRAs over to this company, your investment, and here's a sure investment of 10%.
Wow, that's an amazing story. Thanks for sharing that. Now, can you talk to us a little bit about maybe that the recent vulnerable adult statute we talked about that went in effect recently in Arizona, and how does it work, et cetera? And please explain for our listeners exactly the term, what that means, vulnerable adult.
Right, I said I'd get to this. This is, I was talking about how we've been getting additional complaints lately, the romance schemes, the people taking over accounts, powers of attorney, people complaining about their passwords getting stolen, things like that. Most of these complaints have come thanks to this new statute. When I say new, it was enacted in 2019. It's based on legislation that has been used in about 27 different states. Its purpose is basically to create whistleblower protection for financial service professionals. If a financial service professional, that can be your broker, that can be your investment advisor, it can even be a banker, if they see potential financial exploitation of an eligible adult, they can report it to us, us being the Arizona Corporation Commission or Adult Protective Services and a third parties who might have a benefit. So it basically does two things. It gives whistleblower protection to the financial professionals, and then it gets more complaints to us in APS. It's designed to protect what's called eligible adults. Eligible adults can be one of two things. Anyone over 65 is an eligible adult, or it can be a vulnerable adult. Those are not mutually exclusive. Vulnerable adults can be 65 or older. A vulnerable adult means an individual that's over 18 and is unable to protect themselves from abuse, neglect, or exploitation. It can be because of a physical impairment. It can be because of a mental impairment. So a lot of times the first thing that pops to mind is maybe an elderly person with dementia. That's certainly the case, but physical impairments will do it too. If you're in a wheelchair, if you're blind, any situation where someone could come in and take advantage of you by signing contracts, filling papers, that allows the financial professional to report any sort of abuse that they see. In addition to reporting, the financial professional can stop transactions. They can put a hold on them before they even happen. An example would be if someone has only been paying their bills, they have a set income, set expenses, all of a sudden they make a $40,000 car purchase at the local BMW dealer. If a financial professional sees something that out of character, they can put a stop on it and they can report it to the Arizona Corporation Commission and Adult Protective Services. We can then investigate. The financial professional can only hold it for 15 days. We have the option of holding it for longer. Now, what we can do at the Arizona Corporation Commission is if we see that it was a result of some sort of financial advice, bad financial advice, or some sort of investment scheme, maybe they wanted to withdraw that $40,000 to invest in a note, some stock, then we can investigate further and put a stop to it. The statute has been pretty effective so far. We've gotten a lot of complaints. We've almost And every time that they put a hold on it, they being the financial professionals, have been able to talk to the person whose funds are being held, explain the situation, and the person has said, okay, I see that's a problem. I'm no longer interested in transferring my funds. So while we have not taken many actions yet, we certainly investigate all these, we take them seriously, and it does seem that a lot of times a call from us, from Adult Protective Services or from the financial professional, will stop the fraud without further funds being transferred. So it's been very good for that, and we've certainly seen some awful situations that we've been fortunate to step in, and hopefully it will continue along that path.
Wow, that's also very important to know. And I think folks can read more specifically about the statute on the Commission's website at azcc.gov and click on the securities panel and you'll find more about it. I believe so. Is that right, Ryan?
To find out more about the statute, probably the best place to go is to an organization called NASA, N-A-S-A-A. They have an entire page dedicated to this. If you search for NASA and vulnerable adult, they will show the states that have enacted this, they'll show the model legislation, and they'll discuss some of the initiatives that they're putting in place. On our site, what you can do is you can find where to report it. However, reporting, just keep in mind that it's available for financial professionals. If you have a complaint about a securities fraud and you're not a financial professional, we have a way of reporting that. But this is limited to the financial professionals who see the exploitation of adults. They report this and they get the whistleblower protection.
All right, excellent, excellent, good. Next, I think it's important for us to highlight some warning signs of investment fraud for our listeners. Now, can you highlight some red flags of fraud that investors need to watch out for?
Yes, there are a lot. Some of them I've already hinted at. So let me talk about those. They depend on the fraud themselves. So one would be the romance schemes. If you're talking to someone online, they want to date you, they want to be your partner, they ask for money, be very cautious. It's almost certainly part of a scheme, especially if someone asks very early on and they haven't met you yet. So we've seen that quite a bit. The prize money thing. If anyone says you've won an award or a prize and you need to pay for it or you need to do almost anything at all to get it, that is most likely a fraud. If you see something that says a virus breach requires you to call a number or what we see frequently is allow someone to remotely control your computer, that is almost certainly a fraud. You shouldn't have to give any personal information being your phone number, social security number, bank account number. I've seen some where they've said, we've hacked into your bank account and we're going to take your money unless you send us money. Now, obviously, if you're not panicked, you sit back and you think, well, if you're already in my account, why don't you just take the money? But when you are panicked and you see people doing that, that they're in your account, you may be more prone to sending them the money quickly to solve the problem. Keep in mind, you should call your bank. Your bank probably has some steps to do this, to take care of this. You shouldn't have to send money to these people. So those are very specific, not necessarily securities. Securities fraud, I would say, watch out for high returns. And I'd say that any returns over 10%, that should be a red flag. That's a very high return on investment, higher than the stock market. You should be wary of anyone that guarantees a return or a payment that big. There's always risk, anything could happen. If they guarantee something, be a little cautious. Sometimes what you'll see is they'll put risks in paper and then they'll say, well, my lawyer made me put that in there, but just between you and me, this is safe. Be very wary of someone doing anything like that. If it's in the paper, you read those risks, they're there for a reason. I'd say another red flag would be anyone who purports to already be very rich and just wants to share it with you. Similarly, anyone that purports to be very wealthy but needs your money very soon. The bigger the return they're promising, the worse this is. For example, I've seen a case where someone promised almost 100% or 100 times the return. So if you invested $1,000, you would earn $100,000. You should ask yourself, if the return is that big, why doesn't this person just get a loan on their home and keep all the money themselves? Why would they want to get me involved? And especially if they're pushing to get it soon, why would they need it soon if they're so wealthy? So I'd say anytime anyone promises a big return, guarantees it, or is in a rush to get your investment, be very hesitant to invest with that person.
So you would probably agree that they should, the investor should take their time, do some due diligence. So how would they do that? I mean, if they want to, how would they know to check out? Where would they check out a person like that? I know it's with us, but how do they go about doing that?
There are a few ways to check someone. First off, you can check and see if they're registered at all. Both the SEC and FINRA have websites where you can simply plug in a person's name and see if they are registered. So one is advisorinfo.sec.gov. Another one that does the same function is brokercheck.finra.org. This is only for people that are registered. However, if you see someone selling securities and you get the idea that this selling investments is a big part of their business and they're not registered, that should be a red flag for you, and you should start asking questions why they're not registered and why they don't need to be. Specifically, you should ask, are you exempt from registration? And if so, what is the exemption? Another thing you can do is you can call the Corporation Commission, the Securities Division. You can file a complaint. We can investigate merely based on an offering. And while we can't necessarily give you advice over the phone or tell you right away what to do, you can call our number, we will investigate, and if we find some red flags, we'll let you know. This goes back to another one of the red flags, though. If someone is rushing you for an investment, this is one of the reasons why it would be a red flag. They don't want you to take your time. They don't want you to contact the agencies. Other things you can do, you can look at the business's organizational history in their state. In Arizona, you can go to the Corporation Commission's website, the Corporations Division, and the site is called eCorp. So if a company purports to be around for a while, I gave the example of one that was formed in 2008 and claimed to have operated from 2008 till 2019. If you'd looked up their history, however, you'd see they were dissolved for many of those years and had to get reinstated. If you find the company was just formed recently, that might be a red flag too. You might wonder what's going on there. And then lastly, you can just simply Google people. They may have judgments against them. In the case I cited, if you can Google people, find public records. You can go to courts from there, look up court public records. And then I guess a public record that I should have mentioned earlier is the county recorder. You can see if people have had their homes foreclosed. You can see if they're, in this case, if they're a real estate development company, you can see if they're actually buying homes. So you can get a sense of, are they operating as they say they are and for how long? And maybe you can get a sense of the people involved and what their history has been.
Well, it sounds like it's important to do one's homework, doesn't it? And I would definitely encourage people to contact the Corporation Commission's investigator on duty. Anytime, they can send an email. I manage the info@azinvestor.gov, public inquiry box. Once again, Ryan, thank you so much for providing our listeners with some valuable information on avoiding investment fraudsters. And in closing, I certainly encourage people to sign up for our investor news alerts, either at the website azcc.gov, or by emailing me a message to me at info@azinvestor.gov, and I certainly will help you get signed up for that. And our toll-free number in Arizona is 1-866-VERIFY-9, and that translates numerically into 837-4399. That's toll-free within the entire state of Arizona, so we're just a click or a call away. So who are you going to call? Not Ghostbusters, but the Fraudbusters at the Arizona Corporation Commission Securities Division. In closing, thanks so much for listening to us today, and we certainly hope to have another important message for you very, very soon.